Now, a week from today, this show will be coming to you from Des Moines, Iowa, as we prepare for it'll be the Iowa caucus a week from tonight. This is where people get in church basements and living rooms and gyms, and they sit around and they divvy up sides, and they do this whole thing in Iowa that is so different than it is pretty much anywhere else in the United States. And there's a lot of people who poo-poo the idea of the caucus by saying, oh, look at all these candidates. They have to suck up to all the people in Iowa, and does that really count? Because Iowa is such a small state. But I think it's actually a piece of genius, because what happens is these politicians all got to go stand literally in living rooms of these people and kiss their keisters.
Well, and they're real people, because they're used to, like, you know, being entertained by super PACs and very wealthy types who raise a lot of money for their campaigns. But this is like, you know, talking to regular people about regular issues that affect all of us. And I like seeing Donald Trump in those staying in the motel last night. I guess he had to stay in a motel. Usually he flies back in his private jet, but he had to stay in a motel because he had too much campaign.
Too much. He's got a week to go.
Yeah, he's got to be there.
I think I better buy this motel.
You mean like a Super 8? I don't know which one it was, but he did stay in a motel.
And he had $12.95 steak last night. Did I see that? Is that what I saw? That was what he had for dinner. All right. Hey, Dennis Goldford is a professor of political science at Drake University. And that's where tonight's the debate or town hall is for.
He goes Holiday Inn Express.
Oh, that's
nice. Where he stayed.
There's nothing wrong with the Holiday Inn
Gives
Express.
Gives it a thumbs up, in fact.
Isn't that right, Dennis? I think that's those are all nice.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you stay where you need to stay.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. And tonight they got the Democratic town hall tonight. You got your Hillary Clinton. You got your Bernie Sanders, and then the other guy, as everybody is calling him, the good looking guy who looks like he is
like the
there.
Perfect candidate.
Right, he's there. Like they hired an actor to stand there and just give them some time out so the two of them can get their thoughts together. and let me before we get, because I want to talk a little bit about the whole process in Iowa first, and we'll get to what Hillary or you know, maybe Bernie has to do tonight to make a difference here. But there is some genius to this, right? Because the Iowa caucus goer, they have an incredibly, we're told, good BS detector when it comes to candidates, but yet still Donald Trump does well there. I can't figure that all out. So explain a little bit about how this process developed.
Well, it's an entirely historical accident. Iowa's always had caucuses, and caucuses occur every 2 years. So even in a year when there's no presidential election, just congressional and other elections. And the thing that put the caucuses on the map is Jimmy Carter in 1976, because the caucuses are essentially private business meetings of the political party in question, Democrat and Republican. There are no delegates selected. They simply discuss issues, and the only elections are electing people to delegates from the precincts to go to county conventions. There are no delegates elected to the national conventions. So what the caucuses do, essentially, when the presidential politics side of things got piggybacked on them, is give us the first time that, in some somewhat of an official sense, party activists, people who follow this stuff, and you guys have done your homework, you know about they're having to talk to real people, the candidates do, the party activists give their impressions of their preferences for who they'd like to see the party nominee to be. So
and
that's
then the
all
people,
it is.
The people who attend the caucuses then, they line up, and this is a fascinating thing to me. It's not like you go to a ballot box and a booth and you hit a button or you poke a hole in a card.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation where you go into a room and you know, and in every corner of the room, and for the Republicans, there's going to be a lot, right? Because there's still a number of people.
But hold on a second. The Republicans don't do this. For Republicans, it's simply a straw poll. You write down somebody's name on a piece of paper and stick it in a box. That's all that is.
So it's more secretive. It's more secretive on the Republican side.
But in the room.
In the room, but it's a secret preference vote. But you're right. The Democrats are the ones who do this dance we call the preference groups. So they say everybody in favor of Hillary Clinton, you go to that corner. And everybody in favor of Bernie Sanders, you go to that corner. Anybody undeclared, you go to this other corner. Anybody for Martin O'Malley, you go to this corner. And you're right. You have to stand up in public and say, I'm committed to supporting this particular candidate. And you've got to reach a minimum threshold, normally 15% of the members of the people participating at that precinct. And if you don't, your group has to disband and you've got to go somewhere else. So think of the O'Malley people if they don't get that minimum threshold. So the people in the other groups say, come on over here. We know you want to support Hillary or we know you want to support Bernie. So that's this dance that you're describing. It's so fascinating to look at. For the Republicans, it's simply write a name down on a piece of paper and basically leave. That's about it.
What if you don't get 15%, though, in the Republican?
Doesn't matter. The Republicans simply report these preference vote totals. And so statewide, if we say Trump wins 34% and Cruz 32% and Rubio 27%, that's precise. That's they got 27% of all these preference votes cast around the state. The delegates never release the raw numbers. They give us this very complicated term called state delegate equivalents, and I won't bore you or your listeners with that, but it's an approximation. And if for example, O'Malley doesn't have any viable groups, but maybe had a couple people for him, they in essence disappear because they're not counted, because they can't be there. They've got to go to one of the other candidates.
Oh, that's interesting.
Does it surprise you? Iowa Democrats have successfully picked the eventual nominee every time except twice since 1976. And it's Iowa, and people complain about the, you know, the demographics there and everything. But does it surprise you to think about that?
Well, you know, all both sides do here in Iowa is basically give their opinion of these candidates. Now, the question is, what does the rest of the country do with that information? I mean, I've argued for a long time the Iowa precinct caucuses are an essentially meaningless political event with tremendous political impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because people around the country say, well, boy, this guy did a lot better than I thought he would, or this gal didn't do as well as I thought she would. So it's all about expectations. And in fact, if you exceed expectations and come out of nowhere and come in second, you're a bigger story than the person who comes in first but was always figured he'd come in first. So it's about doing better than expected. That's why you'll hear some of them start to lowball expectations. Are you going to win? Well, we just hope to do well.
Yeah,
you
know, and it's important because momentum becomes the play. And especially when you're back-to-backing in another small state that can give you some corruptible information. I'm just going to put it that way. New Hampshire, you got to, if you come out and you're 0-2, a big time candidate with a lot of expectations can start to lose momentum. And I think that's a little bit of, you know, the Trump policy, the Trump strategy here has been just winning these first two and then he can start to run the table.
It puts you on the board. Right. I mean, in 2007, 2008, Rudy Giuliani for a while led in national polls. Of course, the former mayor of New York who ran based on 9/11. But he didn't really compete in Iowa or New Hampshire. He decided he'd start in Florida, but the ship had sailed at that point.
Yeah.
But you have to remember, Iowa is not first because it's important. Iowa is important because it's first. Because we don't have a national primary, because we don't have all the states going on the same date. If the U.S. Virgin Islands were first, they'd be of greater importance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Being first.
You know, Professor, let me just ask you very quickly. What do you think about the idea of going with a regionalized primary season where there's a primary every 2 weeks and you do Northeast Corridor, Southeast, Southwest, you know, and you do it over 6 weeks?
Well, some people have proposed that. The problem is the national parties in D.C. can't order that because essentially the states decide what they want to do. It's like the case of Iowa. All the other states hate the position of Iowa, and I'm not a native Iowan. I'm a former Chicagoan, in fact. But until they can agree on what should replace Iowa, just by default, Iowa retains its position. And Iowa and New Hampshire cover each other's back because they're both very small states that normally otherwise wouldn't really matter. So it's their chance to shine.
Yep. Professor, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks,
it. Appreciate your time. All right. So that explains what we're in for.
Caucusing.
Yeah, we're caucusites. we're going to be Caucasians again next week. So we'll explain that. Hey, by the way, right now, caller number 9.